The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. It is the Purim time. We're starting with a little Purim song. We'll have some Purim stuff later on in the show. In this half hour of the show, we'll be interviewing author Sora Lebronstein, who's written a book called The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story. Yes, this is exciting stuff. It's a great book, by the way. I recommend it. Two thumbs up. We have all kinds of wonderful music during the course of this hour. The portion of the week, we are beginning the book of Leviticus, the portion of Vayikra 1:1, right at the middle. We're in the middle of the Bible stuff. Sorry, no Bible stories, but we'll talk about Purim, hopefully an awesome Hasidic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Yonatan Azriyev, a Bratslover chassid from Petach Tikva, was stabbed in the neck by a Palestinian terrorist. Azriyev grabbed the attacker, threw him against a wall, pulled the knife out of his own neck, and eliminated the terrorist. This is like something right out of one of those movies. Azriyev was released from the hospital and remains at home. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was in Israel this week as terror attacks were happening in Jerusalem, Petach Tikva, and Tel Aviv. Biden said that his wife and two of his grandchildren were having dinner on the Tel Aviv beach near the attacks at the Jaffa port, which is not that far away. An American tourist, Taylor Forrest, was killed in the attack. The Vanderbilt graduate student was ironically a U.S. veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. Seven Palestinians were arrested after yet another Gaza smuggling tunnel collapsed. One man is still trapped underground. His condition is unknown. New York City police arrested Kenny Rochlin, a 26-year-old homeless man, for the stabbing of three people in Brooklyn over the past month, including Yehudaleh Brickman, an Orthodox Jew in Crown Heights. Rochlin is charged with three counts of aggravated assault. Crown Heights residents want him to be charged with a hate crime. And finally, Virginia and Colorado passed resolutions condemning the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement against Israel. California, Florida, Illinois, New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Tennessee are currently working on similar measures. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, who you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have Sora Lebronstein, the author of The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story, online. How are you today, Sarla?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank God. We're doing very well over here. So Purim's coming up. So this is definitely what we refer to as something appropriate for the time, the story of Esther. So before we get into the book itself and the story of Esther, which we somehow always seem to find a new angle to talk about Purim and Esther and the whole story every year here on the Jewish Hour. So tell us about Sarla Bronstein.
Well, I like to say that I'm a middle child, but I say it as a joke because I'm number 9, one of 17.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was always something that I would say to get a reaction. I grew up in Italy, I got married, I moved to New York, and then we moved to Davis, California, where my husband and I work with the Jewish community and the university.
Mm-hmm. That would be UC Davis, I'm assuming?
Yes. And I have 7 sons of my own, and so I'm running a little fraternity here.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's pretty much...
And with all that, you have time to write books. Well-researched books, as a matter of fact.
More than just time, I would say it was more of a, you know, a drive that even though I didn't have much time, I would steal, you know, small hour here and there because I was very motivated to sort of set the record straight. There's a lot of movies and stories and novels that have been written on Esther and from any and every angle, from Hollywood to, you know, R-rated versions to cartoons. But none I felt that truly gave Esther her voice. It's a bit like having men describe what it feels like to be pregnant and, you know, go into labor as opposed to a woman who has gone through it. So I wanted the story of Esther to be written from a perspective of a deeply religious and observant woman, which Esther was.
Okay, so there are many, many commentaries on the Book of Esther, but you presented this as a novel. Why is it a novel, or like could we call it? Would we say it's historical fiction, or it's still has this idea of like a story that we're reading? Why not present it as a commentary?
Because there have been written some stories on Esther, written as almost like documentaries or commentaries, but I felt they were very dry, and I wanted the story to be told in a way that people would be able to appreciate it and also relate to Esther as a very real person. If we want to learn and be inspired by someone, we need to relate to them in some sense. So I didn't make up too much of my own. I pretty much followed the classical Jewish tradition that we have on the Book of Esther. I mean, one thing that people need to realize is that the Book of Esther was written while Ahasuerus was what they know him as Xerxes, I guess, was still alive, and they were still under his rulership. So they couldn't really write everything they felt. It had to be written in a way that it wouldn't offend his sensibilities. So a lot of it, any seeming grammatical error or redundancy is not there purely for poetical effect, but it's there to written as in code, so that you should be able to read between the line and the lines. And the code is very much like the code that's used in Talmud, and the commentaries go through it and say this is, you know, from this apparent grammatical mistake, this is what you really learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us an example of a redundancy that would indicate that somebody reading would say, hey, what's this all about? There must be something deeper here, Sarla?
Right. So straight in the beginning it says, and it was in the times of Ahasuerus. He is the same Ahasuerus who that ruled over 127 provinces. And so the question is, why repeat he's the same Ahasuerus as opposed to the time of Ahasuerus, who ruled over 127 countries? So the sages say that in case you think that in the beginning Ahasuerus was against the Jews and then he became pro-Jews and became, you know, an ally, don't be mistaken. He was the same Ahasuerus from the beginning till the end. He didn't have a change of heart. He was the same narcissistic, tyrannical in a way, king who did everything that was politically expedient for him. And so at one point it was good for him to try to get rid of the Jews. At another point was, you know, it better for him politically to help the Jews. So it wasn't that he suddenly became a friend of the Jews.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Sarla Bronstein. She's a Chabad representative in Davis, California, written a book called The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story. One of the things that just like slapped me right in the face when I started reading this was the word Esther. Now, I had been raised that the word Esther means hidden, and it comes from the verse, V'anechi haster aster espanai, God says, I will hide my face. And here it is. The gates of Ishtar have always fascinated me, especially now in the DIA. If you're ever in Detroit, you have to go see it. They have actually a piece of the gates of Ishtar. It is really flipped out to go stand in front and look at this thing. The relationship between the word Esther and Ishtar. So which is Esther called Ishtar or is Ishtar called Esther? How does it work, Sarla?
Well, the way it worked in those days was that much like nowadays, if you walk down the street, any Italian guy will you know, call you, hey, Bella. Not that your name is Bella, but Bella in Italian means beautiful. And it's just a way of calling you, you know, sort of endearingly. In those days, Esther, people who interacted with her would call her Ishtar, because it was a goddess of beauty, and because she was so beautiful, that's what they call her, a bit like the Italians nowadays call people, women, Bella, refer to them that way. And because she was referred to that most of the time, when she had to go to the palace and hide her identity, Mordechai felt it was most appropriate and felt natural to name her Esther, one, because most people already knew her by that name, and second, also because by divine providence, Esther had very poignant meaning in her own life, that she was hiding, and that the divine intent in the beginning for her being forcibly taken to the palace was also hidden.
Now, the word Esther herself, it doesn't say in the story of the book of Esther that she was beautiful. It says, Matzachain Beinei Kol Ra'eha, that she found grace in all that found. So I'm thinking grace. I'm thinking she had like a regalness, or maybe like my bubby who could really cook really well or something like that. But it doesn't say anything about beautiful.
Well, she was beautiful because she's listed as one of the most beautiful women that ever was in the Talmud, among Sarah and Rachel and Rebecca and Abigail. And Esther is listed there as one of the most beautiful women. So she was beautiful. However, she wasn't a young girl. Some opinion holds that she was in her 70s. The youngest opinion is that she was in her 40s. But she definitely outdid all the other contestants because of her inner beauty that shone forth. Mm-hmm. And that she was able to, people related to her in a way that they felt like she was one of her own. And that's why she found grace in everyone's eyes, because of her inner beauty and her inner peace.
Now, so one of the things that I noticed is that this novel is very well researched as far as commentaries and sources and insights into the Megillah, and there is a plethora of material which could have been included in The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story, but wasn't. Did you have some sort of a, I don't know, maybe a limited space? Was there some kind of criteria that it got incorporated into the book?
No. What happened was that originally I thought I was going to write the story from a third perspective, maybe a servant at the palace. But I was encouraged by members of a writing group that I attend that it would be more compelling to write it from Esther's point of view. And as they did, you know, she couldn't be everywhere. So there were parts that I couldn't include because it was strictly from Esther's point of view.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Sarla Bronstein, who has written a book called The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story, is the insights into it. Esther is one of those champion heroines which are mentioned in the Bible. There's not a lot of lady heroes in the Bible. It seems to be very much male-dominated. So if you could tell us, tell us about heroism and why Esther stands out.
One of the main drives to write about Esther was because I felt she was shortchanged in what people described her sacrifice was, that she risked possibly, you know, losing her life by going to the king when at that time the law was that if you came to the king unannounced, then you were subject to the death penalty. But one could say, well, you know, she was the queen and she was beloved. You know, she risked, but, you know, there was a chance that she could have been spared too. And the truth is that her sacrifice went beyond just maybe risking her life. She was putting on the line not just her physical life, but also her spiritual life, in a sense, in that she was put into a situation where it wasn't clear whether what she was doing was completely right. It could have been very, very wrong. And if it would have been very, very wrong, then she would have forfeited her share in the world to come, her possibility to ever be with Mordechai again. And she had the courage to do that for her love of the Jewish people.
But Esther, everybody else, the book ends and everybody lives happily ever after. But it doesn't talk about Esther. She's still Queen Esther. She doesn't go back and say, well, listen, I'm Mordechai's niece, and really I was married to him, and I'd really like to, like, leave and go home and go back to my Jewish lifestyle and live happily ever after with my husband. That doesn't happen to her. She is still Queen Esther, so the sacrifice for her continues, Sarla.
That's right. That's why it's called the Gilded Cage, because for her, while everybody was celebrating their redemption, she didn't really... She was still prisoner at the palace, and that is why I felt the title encapsulated the tragedy, really, that was her life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a lot of people don't realize that simultaneously, since there is really no chronology in the Bible, simultaneous with the Book of Esther, there's crossovers with, say, the Book of Daniel, Book of Daniel, and the Book of Ezra and Nehemiah. They all knew each other. They were all compatriots around at the same time. And you seem to, you were able to weave that in together, which is Ezra, Daniel, and nobody else except Mordechai, as a member of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, the Men of the Great Assemblage, appears in the Book of Esther. But you decided to bring them in to the story of the Gilded Cage.
Well, absolutely. Actually, when I started researching into it and realized that all these great people that you tend to think of them as, you know, they're separate books, so they're separate eras, but they all were contemporaries and they crossed paths and they were, you know, they, when you start learning and reading into it, you see how so many of the things they came up with, the rules, the laws, that they were all related and made sense for the times that they were in. So for me, that was really, you know, a discovery. And you know, I had to put it in because it just made sense. That mm-hmm. was, it made it more real.
Okay, so one of the main things, the way which I was taught, we were taught, one of the major emphases of the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the Torah is not a storybook, it's not a history book, but it's a lesson book. What lessons were you trying to convey to make people better in 2016 in The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Stories, Arla?
Yep. Well, one of the things I should say that, you know, we look at Esther, she's supposed to be a heroine. A heroine is somebody that inspires us. And what made it Esther very inspiring and very contemporary is, you know, the fact that she found grace in everyone's eyes when she was taken forcibly from her happy life and thrown into a cage, really a prison. Imagine, you know, I imagine, like, in modern terms, of somebody who's married to a saintly man being taken captive in Ahmadinejad or Arafat's palace. And so, you know, how would somebody who's depressed and miserable doesn't really find grace in people's eyes. So the fact that that told me that she was able to have this grace, this inner peace, because she accepted everything that happened to her as from God, and that God has a intent and purpose in everything he does that is good. And it's something that we definitely all could learn from her, to sort of let go where you don't have control and let God run the scene, whether we're late, stuck in traffic, or, you know, suffered whatever trauma, you need to realize that, you know, God allowed that to happen to us, and he must have an intent that is ultimately good for us.
Pretty much one more question that bothers me very often, maybe to get it from a woman's perspective. Jewish law mandates that a woman who was put into the situation that Esther was put into should suffer martyrdom rather than have to go live in the palace of this non-Jewish king. So I'm wondering, since Uncle Mordechai was the one who actually wrote the book, did he sort of like gloss over, try to make it more of a, you called it the Gilded Cage. Did he gold plate the story of what happened with Esther to cover over this?
Well, actually, I should correct you. I believe that he was cousin to Esther.
Okay.
At this point, Esther was taken by force and it wasn't that she had the freedom to, you know, well, submit to this or die. And because there were, she was accepting, I guess, what was happening to her as this is from God, and they felt that there was a purpose behind it.
Okay. Very good. So that's going to do it for us today. Again, our guest today has been Sara LeBronstein. The book is called The Gilded Cage, Queen Esther's Untold Story. I'm assuming it's available on Amazon and wherever else one
yes.
can get books. And is there a Kindle edition yet, Sara?
Yes.
Oh, cool. And so you can get it. And if you want to really get the inside scoop on the Book of Esther and what's happening with Purim, so this is the book. What's up next in the hopper? It took you 7 years to write this, so I'm assuming that it'll be another 7 years or so before we get the next one then. Hey, Esther? Sarla?
Yeah, well, God willing, I've had many requests to take on many other biblical personalities, and God willing, I shall take on the story of Dina and Osnat, since not much is known from the plain text, but we do have a wealth of information from the Midrash and all the traditional classical Jewish commentaries that really should, you know, give justice to the story.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to see that. I hope we remember to send us a copy, and we'll talk about that.
Hopefully it won't take me another 6 years.
We'll see. Okay, we want to thank you so much for coming on and wish you tremendous success, and especially in your shlichus in Davis.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Shulvin, and here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. That was very, I like that. This is a good thing to get. We have up next, it is the month of Adar, and in cruising around, I came across this artist whose name is Adar. That's his first name, which Adar comes from the word Hadar, meaning to like be splendid or also graceful, beautiful, that type of a thing. So his name's Adar, because we're in that month, and this is called Halayla, which is a wedding song. Let's listen. ולחוצי סירושלים פרססוין וכויל שמחות כל חסון וכויל קלו אוי, אוי, אי שומע
Oh,
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Time for the klezmer part of the show. This group is called Karaoke, which is, I might be like some Slavic word for me with the word karaoke, but karaoke is Japanese, I know that. But it's called Karaoke, is the name of the group, and the song is called Yiddish Freilach, which means happy Jewish music. It is Pur, it's Purim time.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I'm a bit miffed at the lack of produced Purim music for 2016. In years past, by this time, there would be several songs worthy of playing on the Jewish Hour, but as of this, as of this presentation of this show, there's just nothing out there yet. It's I'm looking at, do I want to play last year's stuff, the year before last year's stuff? So instead, I'm ignoring that. And what we have up next for you, this is an Israeli artist who is new on the scene. He's a young fellow. I don't even think he's 20 years old. His name is Yitzhak Dardar, and this is a song called Rabbi Nachman, which is a song which is sung by the Breslover Hasidim, or some of them anyway, and singing adulations to the leader of their group. This is Rabbi Nachman. It's just for you. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are starting the book of Leviticus 1:1, and with the portion of Vayikra, which is this week's portion. It is the book of Leviticus, as whichever Greek person or Jewish Greek-speaking person decided to call it that, is an indication that it has to do with things that Levites, meaning Kohen, and the priests, were doing in the temple. Because, as we left off in the book of Exodus, with the building of a sanctuary, so now that we've got the thing, well, what do we do with it? And that's what the book of Leviticus is all about, is what do we do with it? And it talks there about animal sacrifices. We've spoken about animal sacrifices before. The first three portions, this week, next week, and the week after, are pretty much thoroughly dedicated to various and sundry, I wouldn't say sundry, but various sacrifices. In the portion of Shemini, which is 2 weeks from now, we have a little bit of story about the actual consecration of the erection of it, and then it's followed with the purification that goes beforehand and leads into various laws of how to act as a holy person. So this is what the book of Leviticus is all about. It's not simple reading. You can't just kick back and read that, but you really can't just kick back and read any part of the Bible when you really think about it, because it's, as we said earlier, it's not a storybook. It's not a history book. It's a book to derive lessons in how to make ourselves better people and make the world around us a better place. So such is true also. One of the sacrifices mentioned in this portion is referred to as a guilt offering for theft. This entails somebody lends somebody some money, or somebody says to somebody, can you watch this thing for me? And then when it's time for that person, the original owner, to come collect it, so the person who has it in his possession denies having it in their possession. This person is specifically called a thief. You know, if I give you something to watch and you don't give it back to me, you stole it from me. Hello? So there is, once this person now, so the person whose thing it was has to adjudicate, he has to go to court, the person has to take an oath. He takes an oath, I never took this thing. And then it's found out, oh, he lied under oath. So in Judaism, we're not into the jail time thing. That doesn't really solve anybody's problem. He's got to pay the thing back. There's a punishment of 20% in there. And then because he took this oath and it was totally and completely false, he has to bring the sacrifice. And the sacrifice is a guilt offering. It's supposed to act as an atonement for his self-centered behavior. We have this idea of entrusting deposits from our relationship with the Almighty. Do you ever wonder, we have talked about this before, what happens when you go to sleep? Here it is, it's nighttime, you've had this whole long day, and you go to sleep. And then after a period of time, you stop sleeping and you're not tired anymore, hopefully. What happened when you went to sleep? Okay, so your breathing, heart rate, digestion kind of sort of slowed down a little bit. Okay, so instead of breathing, say, 20 times a minute, you breathed 14 times a minute. Is that really such a relax to you? And if you look at it, neurological function actually speeds up. Your brain is working harder when you're asleep, hence those weird dreams. I'm not even sure about that. But what's happening when you go to sleep is a part of your soul goes up to its source. The person's day is looked upon and decided, well, the guy have a good day, the guy not have a good day. Then the instructions, the guy gets the report card for the day, he then gets instructions, this is what you need to do tomorrow. That little piece of soul is energized so that it can have what it needs to get through the next day. And then that soul is sent back down, and we wake up. And you may notice this, you may have not noticed this. It says that the soul coming back into our body enters through our nostrils. What might you have noticed is when the alarm clock goes off, and you flip the alarm clock off, what's the next thing you usually do? Or when you first wake up, you open your eyes, the first thing you do is you go like this. You inhale through your nostrils. I'm aware of this because I know about this, but if you haven't, try it tomorrow and see that this is exactly what you do. That's your soul coming back into your body. So what have we done? We went to sleep entrusting our soul to the Almighty. The last line of there's for Jews, there's prayers for basically everything. There's also a prayer for going to bed. And the last line of the prayer that we say before to go to bed is, in your hands, Hashem, I trust my soul. Meaning, the word trust means that you're not going to break it and you're going to give it back to me. But Hashem not only gives it back to us, Hashem, how would it be? You give something to somebody to watch. Could you please watch this for me? And when you get it back, you actually get it back in better condition than when you gave it. So the Almighty wants us to emulate him. This is later on in the book of Leviticus. V'yishem kedeshim ki kadosh ani. You should be holy because I'm holy. Now, there's a big difference between me and God. There's a big difference between most of us and God. So this caveat of you be holy because God is holy is like, huh? What's one thing got to do with the other? But we are taught that the ways of the Almighty are the ways which we should emulate. It says, Behold derechecha de'ehu, in all your ways you should know him. Acher Hashem alakechem talechu, after your Hashem your God you shall follow. Meaning to say that the book, the Bible, as a handbook and guide, gives us the clear path. What is it that we need to do? Not just in our relationship between us and God, that's obvious, but also our relationship between us and people. And if it's such a given thing, most people, when they go to sleep, they set the alarm clock because they expect to wake up tomorrow in a better state than when they went to sleep. So our relationship with people have to be the same way. In fact, God says it's more important that you relate to people in a proper way than you relate to God, because God's not going to get insulted. You know, it's whatever shortcomings we have between us and God, he's good. We had this a couple of weeks ago. Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed. God is patient and has great kindness and is easy to forgive. That's fine. What about the guy that you crossed or wronged? God forbid that something like that happened. It says, don't put yourself into that position. The Torah doesn't want us, God doesn't want us, to be offering sacrifices for misdeeds. What the Torah wants is that we not have the misdeeds. These are all secondary things. If it was that the person did this, they'll have to do this to make up for it. But for sure, it's much better. So in relating to other people, let's take a look at the book of Leviticus. We could see we have to relate to people in such a way that if somebody gives us something, whatever happens to be, if someone is giving us their friendship, for example, we have to give them back friendship better than what they're giving us. We have to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. You want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com. www.rabbifinman. Right there on the homepage. Contact us. We'll contact you. Everything's good. You'll also find archived editions of the show from the last 5 weeks. If you want to hear a show that was more than 5 weeks old, well, we have other media for that. We have iTunes for podcasting, Stitcher on your smartphone, and jcastnetwork.com on your computer that you can go back to 2009 Talk about binge. That's become a popular thing in America, sitting and binging. Binge on the Jewish Hour. Let me know how that goes for you. We also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which we convey Judaism in an educational, hopefully entertaining way. And there's also the very important donations page. We've started March. February is still on the books. We have not closed the books on February. We need that little push from you. We're not that far away, and your help is going to get us through February. March is our anniversary. We've been on air now for 20 years. So March is membership month. You want to become a member of the Jewish Hour? $36. Either send it by check or whatever, some other form of negotiable funds to 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237, or make a $36 donation on the rabbifinman.com. We'll send you a CD, and you do get to be a member of a very select group of people who are members of the Jewish Hour. Of course, you could always give more. If you give less, you don't get the CD. If you want to say, if you want to give, like, say, $100,000 and say, I want 20 CDs, okay, we'll accommodate that, too. Go to rabbifinman.com, give today, drop a letter in the mail, the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. This week marked the Shloshim, the 30 days of the passing of a friend of mine. He was the son of the rabbi who got me involved with Judaism. His name was Yoshua Binyamin Gordon of blessed memory. We always called him JB. Most people called him Josh. He started his rabbinic career here in Detroit, as a matter of fact. I don't know how long exactly he was here for, but for whatever reason, he left and he moved to the valley, and I think it's called the San Fernando Valley. I'm not sure what the valleys are and which valley what, but the one that's due east of Los Angeles. And he started in his house, in his living room, with 20 chairs. And that was in the early 1970s. And after 40 years or so, there are 26 different Chabad houses around the valley. So there's a story that captures exactly who he was. There was a person who was giving him sizable contributions, and then that person filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The creditors went through the person's books and saw that instead of paying his bills, he was giving charitable donations and demanded that Rabbi Gordon give the money back. Of course, this now had to go into be adjudicated. It went through the bankruptcy court, and he had to be deposed. This Rabbi Gordon was deposed. In the middle of the deposition, it was like lunchtime, this thing, he asked his lawyer, "Do you think the guy deposing me is Jewish?" So he said, "I don't know. It doesn't matter. He's deposing you. He really wants to kill you." This way, this guy, the questioning, it was really mean, man. So he said, no, this is very important. He ran to his car and got his tefillin, which are prayer ornaments, which Jewish men wear in the morning. In the middle of the deposition, he stopped the questioning and said, "How old are you? And are you Jewish? Have you ever put on tefillin? And would you like to do this now?" This is the major, there's thousands of dollars in the discussion over here in this litigation. And he's thinking about putting on tefillin with this guy. So the guy wouldn't hear any, the lawyer wouldn't hear anything from it. He said, "I am 50 years old. I never put on tefillin. I am not going to put on tefillin, and I really don't care." So they did the deposition. A couple months later, the thing went in front of the court, and the judge asked Rabbi Gordon, "What would Jewish law say about this case?" And he stood up and just gave this brilliant oratio of the laws of Choshen Mishpat right off the top of his head, these laws of having to deal with tort laws discussed in the Code of Jewish Law. The judge was very impressed and said, "Listen, I don't want to make a decision. I want you guys to hammer out a decision." So they hangled and wrangled in the hallway for 2 hours, and after 2 hours, Rabbi Gordon said, "If the lawyer puts on tefillin, I will give, I'll agree to whatever his terms are." And that was it. They shook hands. The man actually put on tefillin. I don't know what happened afterwards, but as this lawyer who was telling the story said, at that point, the money was irrelevant. It had no consequence to this Rabbi Yoshua Binyamin Gordon. What mattered was that there was another Jew who needed to do a mitzvah. That's going to wrap it up for us. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you again back again next week. Take care.